lunch.
Good morning, everybody. My name's Sandy Beach, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for inviting me back. I've had a wonderful weekend. I've heard so many wonderful messages and been with a lot of old friends, and it really means a lot. I came to AA in Pearl Harbor Day in 1964, and I had a wonderful sponsor for 42 years named Bill Terwilliger. He was another Marine, and it was a wonderful relationship. And he shared his enthusiasm for the fellowship of AA and the message of AA. And for that, I'm really grateful that he just imparted that into me. And I'm one of these guys that just picked up one white chip and stayed. It's a good plan if you're new. Let someone else go out and see if the whiskey still does the damage that it used to. Because after all these years, how do I know that they haven't taken the stuff out of whiskey that was bothering me back in 1964? I don't know. That's an alcoholic mind. I don't know. They could be changing that stuff. It might be different. My story is like everybody else's. I'm really not going to tell my story this morning. I have another story. But my story is just like everybody else's. I found the world very difficult to live in. And I did the best I could, but I didn't belong, didn't fit in. And as soon as I drank, I had the answer to everything. It was the most wonderful power I had ever, ever experienced. It did things beyond my wildest dreams and enabled me to see a world that was wonderful and the people in it. And since it was such a high-level experience, I and other alcoholics are willing to pay one hell of a price to keep it going. And the price, of course, gets bigger and bigger until it's going to take our lives. That's how strong the attachment is to this power of alcohol and the results that it gives just to us alcoholics, not to non-alcoholics. Non-alcoholics drink and they feel pretty good. We drink and we go to heaven. There's... Heaven's worth dying for. Pretty good. I'll puke once, but not again. So we're in a rather special crowd. And in the beginning, it looks like it was a bad thing that we were the 10% that had this particular malady. But if you're fortunate enough to get into the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and experience the power of the 12 steps, you suddenly realize the journey was worth it and nothing was wasted, that your past is different. You get to see it entirely different, and you see why it was all necessary, why it was so crucial to go down until you held up the white flag. Because that's the only way that human life gets transformed, is when we hold the white flag up. Now, the real magic can begin. And so if you're new, I'm sure you're not thrilled to, you've been in AA a week. I heard all these people around me after my first, isn't sobriety wonderful? And I'm just going, God, let me out of here. I just can't stand it. God, it was awful. And there were a lot of things about AA I didn't like. Boy, I didn't like a lot of things. I would sit home at night and I'd read the book and I'd think about what happened at meetings. I had a run-in with a Catholic church and I parted company with them. That was the scariest, spookiest thing I ever encountered. I don't want anything to do with religion, spirituality, God, any of that stuff. So I just refused to say the Lord's Prayer. I just mumbled. I went, and now it brings tears to my eyes. And we hold hands at the end of the meeting. So what happened? I changed my mind. I changed my mind. The word that bothered me the most was God. Now it's my favorite word. Spirituality, I didn't want anything to do with. Now I'm obsessed with it. I just love it. I just spend time reading. I want more. I want to experience more. It became the greatest thing in the world. I didn't want to do an inventory. Why should I do that? I'm sick and tired of that. Greatest thing that ever happened. I didn't want to make amends. Why should I make amends? Why don't they make amends? Peace. So you can see I had a lot of things that I thought were wrong with AA. And if AA had treated me kindly and not hurt my feelings and accommodated me, I'd be dead. That's where I'd be. I'd be dead. Because the purpose of the program is to transform us. And when you're new, it's too big a leap to understand that when you transform yourself, you transform the world. You keep wanting the world to be different. Again, the world is awful. The only way to change it is to change yourself. And then when you open your eyes, you will see a different world. And you'll see God's world. And it's worth the entire journey. So that's all on my story. So now comes... I go way out on limbs, you'll find out. But it's how I learn. Is to explore a subject in front of a crowd. So if I had to tell you the name of this talk, it's called The Exact Nature of the Spiritual Malady Dimension of the Disease of Alcoholism. Ernie Kurtz, eat your heart out, man. We all hear that alcoholism is a threefold illness, mental, physical, and spiritual. And we know that science has come up with understanding the physical aspect of it, and we heard about synapses and what happens up in the brain and the chemistry, and it's different. And so we've made a lot of progress in understanding the exact nature of the physical aspect. And we've made a lot of progress in understanding the mental. What is the exact nature of the mental? And I sometimes think in the 12th step and the 12 and 12, it's captured very well. Childish, immature, and grandiose. That's the assessment of the doctors after AA was about 10 years old. And we thought we had matured. So we need to be sponsored into right living. We need to be shown how a grown-up behaves and how we should operate and how we fit in. And so a lot of work and a lot of discussion takes place on the exact nature of this aspect. And then we just go, and it's also a spiritual problem. Well, what spiritual problem is it? What is the exact thing about the disease of alcoholism what is the spiritual problem that it creates? And all human beings have the spiritual problem. We're not alone. All human beings are mental, physical, and spiritual. And as time goes by, they find that if they don't address the spiritual aspect of themselves, they don't feel comfortable. They don't feel complete. They feel like something's missing, and that there's something inside of them that is pushing them to explore this. We call it restless, irritable, discontent. It just, Clancy talked about the spring tightening up, and everybody in the room related to that. The first day, fine. Second day, shut up. Third day, and now we're at work. And we go, why can't I be at peace? Why can't I be at peace ever? And we're given the answer early on. They say, well, you've got to have contact with your own creator. Oh, I can do without that. I understand. Yeah, some people need that, but I'm a pretty smart guy. I like the idea. My father told me, you do it yourself, man. You get it done. You get the job done. It's up to you. Nobody lives your life for you. What are you, a man or a mouse? I'm going to join the Marine Corps. The few, the proud. God, what a great word. Proud. I had no idea it was a character defect. I had no idea it had the list. The top of the list. Boy. And so we seem to be here on planet Earth for some kind of a reason. And there's many stories that explain this. And my favorite has always been the prodigal son. That we leave home and we go out on our own and we're full of it and we're going to get it done. And we do. We get a lot done. But we're miserable. And we really miss home. And we miss our father. But our pride won't let us turn around and go back and say, maybe I made a mistake. Now, this applies to everybody, not just alcoholics. And everyone at some point has to come to grips with what are they going to do about this. When I was growing up, they called it midlife crisis. You're the vice president of a good corporation. You have a boat, a wife, three kids, nice car. You're thinking of suicide. Why? You won. You got it. You got everything. Yeah, I do on the outside. But everything's all screwed up on the inside. What am I going to do about it? And we get into self-help, where we get all these things. But throughout history, there seems to be this spiritual force that eventually, if people are lucky, they find themselves seeking. And I've often thought, because in the spiritual world, you can't do it scientifically, you can't do anything, and we have to use stories to explain everything. Fables, myths, stories, it's the only way. And we do that in AA. Speaker after speaker gets up and tells their story. And when they finish their story, someone out in the audience identifies with that story, and their life begins to change. So there's great power in these stories. And so if I were to try and make up a story about why we're down here in the first place, this is what I tell myself. Because obviously, if I want to go home, I've already been there. I'm returning to something. And we say that all the time. When people die, we say they're going home. Going back, reunited with their own creator, etc. Now, this creator, most all of us accept the fact that it's pure love. And it must be hard to leave pure love and come down to this rotten place and try and figure out what the hell's going on. I mean, just think about it. So we got to explain things. We got to do all that. But there's part of us, whether we acknowledge it or not, that misses home. And I'll tell you where I got a glimpse of that was from Carl Jung. In the letters exchanged between Bill Wilson, if you knew, Carl Jung played a role in helping get AA started. He was a famous psychiatrist that a wealthy alcoholic went to see with hopes that he might be able to help him with his disease of alcoholism. And Dr. Jung worked for a year. At the end of that time, he said, I've done everything I can. You understand the deal if you drink again. And blah, blah, blah. With all this work, the man left. He didn't get too far away. Someone asked him, would you like a drink? And he said, yes, I certainly would. And after a fairly short time, he was back. Because Dr. Jung represented everything that was possible within human power. And Dr. Jung, the essence of human power, looked him in the eyes and said, there's nothing I can do for you. That's pretty bad. He said, you have two choices. You're going to get a bodyguard who can stand beside you. Whenever you go to take a drink, he'll take it away from you. Or you can get locked up in an institution. Those are the only two choices you got. That got his attention. You know, when the leading expert looks you in the eyeballs and said, sorry, no help available. You are desperate. And he asked, well, is there any other thing? And Dr. Jung said, once in a while, an alcoholic of your type has a profound spiritual experience and is able to stay sober and happy. He said, I've heard about them. I may have met one person who had that. I don't know exactly where you're going to find it, but I would really look for that. Now, up until Dr. Jung told him there was no hope, you couldn't have gotten him to look for spiritual awakening. And he said to Dr. Jung, oh, good, I'm a very active member of my church. And Dr. Jung said, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about something bigger than that. I'm talking about a profound spiritual awakening. So he went out, and fortunately, the Oxford group was sort of the in thing. It had really been catching on, and it was a spiritual movement, met in people's homes, followed the principles set forth in early Christianity. They did it themselves, no ministers, nobody in charge, just meeting in homes and try to become better people. These are people who aren't alcoholics. They're meeting to become better people. This is so far out of our league. Going through all this when you don't have to? Oh, yeah. Just because you want to be a better person? Sure, where the room is filled with people like that. I'm really not an alcoholic. I joined AA just to become more spiritual. Yeah, right, right. So we all got here with a gun at our head, and that's the reason it works. And he got sober. And then he passed the message on to Bill's sponsor, who passed the message on to Bill. So later on, when Bill was reflecting on the history of AA, he said, well, geez, Carl Jung played an important role. I ought to write him a letter thanking him. And he wrote it to him just in time because Dr. Jung died not too long after that. And he talked about Roland and the fellowship, etc. And Dr. Jung wrote back and said, well, I lost track of him, but I'm so glad to hear that he did all right. And he went on to say that when he saw Roland, Dr. Jung was very into spiritual matters. And he said, my profession would have laughed at me if I had been talking about spiritual matters, kind of like today. But now I feel safe in telling you that I see alcoholism as a spiritual situation. And he went on to explain that the spirit of God could conquer the spirits found in alcohol. And he went on to make an observation which I have interpreted for myself to say, the thing that alcoholics have is an inordinate longing for God. They really miss home, but they don't know it. And they have no idea that that is the cause of their discomfort and their being not at peace inside of themselves. But they're seeking to fix it. So we're sitting, everybody else has the same problem, but we just have it 20 degrees more. This not feeling comfortable in our own skin. So when we find alcohol, we really solve a big problem. We really take a giant step forward. And so what happens to us is, because of the power of the chemical alcohol, alcoholics honestly believe that they can become complete people without God. All it takes is some drinks. And now, finally, this eternal human problem that everybody has is fixed by this chemical alcohol. And it doesn't fix the problem for all the other people. So we're like in a special class. We were singled out for advanced deception. Isn't that clever? So if I were to try and categorize the exact nature, it is the disease of alcoholism is able to convince the alcoholic that he or she can become whole without God. And so not only are we cut off because of alcoholism, we're also told we, unlike all the other people, don't need God in the first place because we're getting it all done through alcohol. And of course, as the ending comes and the disease starts letting us down, we start crying out, God, get me out of this. Get me out of that. Get me out of this. But we don't know how to connect. All we know how to is scream out, you know, give me out of this and I'll do that. And we're lying. We're going to go back to drinking anyway if he gets us out of jail. I was only kidding. God, I had my fingers crossed. I know what you think, but I just had to get out of jail. Eventually I am going to come around, look you up and hang around, but right now I'm doing fine on my own. I don't see any reason to stop. And besides, when you talk about God, people make fun of you, and I don't like people making fun of me. And so we go on our merry way until we have to raise the handkerchief, and we get dragged in here, kicking and screaming. And they make us face all the things we don't want to face. And they tell us that all of our old ideas are probably wrong. This is a very difficult thing to swallow. I don't like to be wrong about anything. I just hate it. I would go home and get in bar arguments. I'd go home, it was before the internet, and I could get an encyclopedia and look up more crap about Lithuania. So that I could settle the argument with that big fat guy down there who thinks he knows about Lithuania. So I, like some other alcoholics I know, would go to any length to be right. I mean, it was crucial. It's just wrong. Jeez, what do you mean wrong? Well, that's extreme self-centeredness. When I look at this whole picture now, The only way out of self-centeredness is to find another center. And before we got here, we had another center. It was alcohol. And when we get here, you cannot fix self-centeredness by yourself. Yeah, I'm self-centered, and I'm going to do something about it. Really? What are you going to do? I'm going to face this way. When you look around, you're still the center. How could you not be self-centered? That just automatically happens. But as we grow up and listen to other people's point of view from their center, we realize there's a bigger picture. And so in here we learn that we can only overcome self-centeredness through by becoming God-centered. And I've gone so far in my own mind as I think these things through to describe sanity and insanity in the same fashion. Sanity is God-centered, insanity is self-centered. When I'm God-centered, everything makes sense. The sun is the center of the solar system, not Earth. When I'm self-centered, Earth is the center of the solar system. Why is that? Because I live here. The hell else would be the center? You see what I mean? See the power of being the center? And of course, when we're self-centered, we are an individual as opposed to all them. And God is out there. And then there's me. And Chuck Chamberlain had that wonderful way of expressing this picture. And if you haven't read or listened to Chuck, he's really a great teacher. I was so honored to meet him 6 or 7 times, and I got to go to his house. And I'm going back in March to Laguna. I'm staying about 4 days, and I want to go to the meeting he used to go to, and I just want to go drive by his house again and talk to old-timers down there, because I just owe it to myself. Last time I saw him was probably 1979. So it's a big deal for me. And Chuck captured self-centeredness perfectly. He draws a circle. If there was a blackboard up here, I'd draw a big circle, and I would say, this is the entire universe. This is everything there is. This is God and the entire universe. This is everything. There's nothing that isn't in that universe. And then he makes a little dot outside the universe, and then there's me. There's me, and then there's the whole universe. I say, you're not part of the universe? No. No. I am separate from the universe. Well, how do you do that? You don't know how to do that? Ho, ho. You just make up a story that you're separate from the universe and believe it. Now, there's a good story. I exist separately from everything. That's a very lonely place to live, and that's where everybody hangs out. That's the dilemma of self-centeredness. That's the human dilemma of not understanding that we're trying to go home so that we're all part of something. But as long as we're rocking and rolling on this prodigal journey, we're going to keep going. And feeding that pride and feeding that ego. Look at me, look at me, look at me. And then we get crashed. And we come down and we come into church basements listening to people. When they say people wouldn't ordinarily mix, I got into AA up there and I'm looking around going, there's only one guy in here I'm going to listen to. I can see. Look at this crowd. I had prejudice against everything. Oh, you're from the South? Wow. So I'll be listening to you. You're Mexican? Ho, ho, ho. Oh, black? Oh, woman? Oh, tall, short, fat? narrow little group that I fit in. And everybody's in that group. I'm a street guy. I got street smarts. Yeah, I'll beat you up.
Oh, yeah, I know. Okay.
And then I get in there, and some guy with a second grade education says something that blows me away. And it wouldn't have blown me away unless I was listening. I would have missed it. Why was I listening? Because I was desperate. And my sponsor told him, you listen to everybody. Okay. And then I'd go over and talk to these people. And God, they had all kinds of wisdom. There's a lot of difference between wisdom and knowledge. When they said things, it resonated deep inside. So we started solving this dilemma that the disease told us. That is, you can be a whole person on your own. And I just love AA because it did that for me. And it really is the greatest thing that can happen to human beings. Whenever I hear people say sobriety is the name of the game, I cringe. Physical sobriety is not the jackpot of Alcoholics Anonymous. Physical sobriety is how you stay alive so that you can work the steps and be transformed. Spiritual awakening is the point of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we don't ever want to cheat anybody out of that, because we are bringing them up at the moment of their utter desperation. That open mind isn't going to stay open that long. Do you know what I'm talking about? You watch what happens when the desperate Joe gets a job and a girlfriend. He's not listening to anything. Not desperate. Don't need help. Don't need God. Don't need any of this. Rocking and rolling. Thank you, AA. I'll be eternally grateful to you for returning me to self-centeredness and self-sufficiency. So we all know the game. And so it's as if this wonderful ship called Alcoholics Anonymous has found a course that it can sail so that we can go on for years and years. But our book says that alcohol is a cunning foe, cunning, subtle foe, cunning, baffling, and powerful. So how could it approach this subject once again? Well, let's, for the sake of a story, say that one day, down the street from us, under the banner of group autonomy, springs up a group with great news for all the alcoholics. We've just discovered you don't need God to get sober.
Really?
Are you sure? Yes. Come down. Here's Fred. He has 20 years. 20 years. This is the best news. This is modern AA. Isn't this wonderful? What? Are you sure? Yes. Yes, we're quite sure. Come down. Sit with us. Be stimulated by our intellectual discussions. We have some of the great thinkers around. And we're sober. And you can't deny that. You can come over and look. You can smell our breaths. We're sober. We're sober. So I picture alcoholics coming and getting sober and thinking that's all there is. I'm sober. And because of my sobriety, life is pretty damn good. Instead of being restless, irritable, and discontent, I'm semi-restless, irritable, and discontent. The four horsemen of terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair that used to trample over me are just circling quietly. But they're not bothering me. And I'm here. And I'm celebrating another anniversary. And I'm sober. I'm sober. I just look at that and I just go, wow, I'm very sad. I'm very sad to see that this new element, this new modern, intellectual, stimulating idea about the disease of alcoholism is taking root and springing up here and there and seeking a little recognition. And so I think about the topic that I came up here, and I said, the exact nature of the spiritual malady of the disease of alcoholism is that it tells us we can become whole without God. Now, in the beginning, it was the chemical alcohol that told us that message. Now it's the human ego. Pride is saying, it's a new day, friends. The book is 76 years old. It's getting obsolete. A lot of things in there just don't need them. Here's proof. I'm sober 15 years. And so we have a new element in the disease of alcoholism that is telling us we can become whole without God. Now, I look at this and I see AA and the great ship. It takes good navigators to keep this thing right on course. And many times I've talked about when I learned how to fly and they had the old low frequency radio and you listened for the A and the N and you wanted to get on the beam. And then if you were on the beam, you could go between the mountain on this side and the mountain on that side, even though you couldn't see a thing. And if you followed it, this invisible force, when you broke out at the bottom, there was a runway right in front of you. It took a lot of faith. Dr. Bob, in his story, describes the situation when he says the end of his drinking, he found himself between Scylla and Charybdis, which was from the Odyssey. And they were sailing the ship between two terrible things. One on the right was a whirlpool that would suck you down if you got too close. And on the left were big waves that would crash you into rocks. And there's all the ships that were crashed on there. And he used that analogy because he found himself that if he didn't drink, his stomach pains got so severe, it would almost kill him. But if he did drink, his nerve problems got so bad, it would almost kill him. So no matter which course of action that he took, he was between a rock and a hard place. And so we are trying to sail AA and keep it on course. And one of the suggestions is that there's a way of combining two approaches, God, no God, and we just mix them, and we'll all be happy. We will have a new potion. Now, these have never been poured together before. What I see coming out of it is a spiritual Kool-Aid. that isn't going to help anyone. And so I am suggesting that the disease, the spiritual aspect of this disease, is rearing its head one more time to offer to the suffering alcoholic the thought that they can become whole without God. And normally I tell my story. I did tell a story today. And I don't know if it'll do any good, but it's the most important story that I know. Because Alcoholics Anonymous has put together a game plan for survival. And we've done it through group consciences and GSRs and DCMs all the way up to trustees, etc. But if you study the service manual, there's one guiding feature that goes throughout it all. And it tells clearly what should be the navigation system used by the Fellowship of AA, and it's the second tradition, and it's everywhere. It's everywhere. A loving God, as he may reveal himself in our group conscience. To me, that is the guaranteed way to go between these two, rock and a hard place. Total reliance on that second tradition. Okay, so that's the end of that. Now I got 5 minutes left to talk to the newcomers so that they walk away going, what the hell was that? This is what it was. When you get to be 80, you can talk about any damn thing you want. Right, Clancy? What are they going to do, throw you out? I mean, come on. And even if you feel like beating me up, you go, beat up an 80-year-old guy. I don't think I'll do that. People might laugh at me. I was being very serious. A lot of times I'm not that way. Sometimes it has to happen. It's like when you're sponsored and you're going along and things are going great and he's almost like your friend and this and that, and all of a sudden he's in your face. He's going, hey! Or she's going, Mary! What the hell is wrong with you? And you're going, hey, what about my feelings? And then they go, bam, bam. And then we know they're doing it because they love us. That's why they're doing it. They're not doing it to be a smart aleck. They're not doing it for any of that. They're doing it because they love you and they want the best for you. And that's why AA is so wonderful. We're in here to ensure the sobriety and the spirituality of every alcoholic who is fortunate enough to come into our midst. And if you're new, you came in to a wonderful group of people. You can rely on everybody in this room. They will put your interests ahead of everything. And sometimes that involves stepping on your toes. It's awful hard to crush the human ego painlessly. It just doesn't happen. But as you go through this pain, you're going to find that it's very much like getting in shape. When you first start, isn't it awful? Every muscle in your body aches and you go, I don't want to do this. Then you start feeling better and you start realizing good things come out of this pain instead of bad things. It was very painful to go to the bottom, but we did it. And so now we're going the other way. And as your sponsor, your group, whatever it is, keeps you on course You're going to thank them later on. You really are. You're going to be the happiest person that people corrected you. And so sometimes a group gets off course and we need to call a little gathering, and sometimes an area, sometimes the entire fellowship could just make a little turn. And so it's up to all of us to think about this stuff. Inventory things. Where are we going? Your voice is just as important as anyone else's. It's very important. What is important to you? For me, it's not quantity. It's not getting everything bigger and reach more millions and millions. It's quality. Quality is the most important thing. What good is it if we can bring in 10 million more people and hand them crap? Okay, so I didn't do too well at cheering up the newcomer. Let me see. Well, if you want to see me after the meeting, I'll give you a beer. I think you got the idea that we have a lot of fun, even in the middle of being very serious. The two outfits that I love being in were the Marine Corps and AA. Those are the only two. And they're both associated with fighting a fatal battle against terrible enemies. And the funny thing is, AA is fighting a much more devastating enemy than the Marine Corps ever faced. We suffer 90% fatalities all the time, year in and year out. Clancy talked about the midnight mission. Hopeless. We need a very powerful weapon to beat this thing. It's a huge force. And it is the preserving of the power in this weapon that we have in AA that'll save our lives forever. And it's been an honor for me to be part of both of those organizations. And if you're new, I love you. Most of the time, I just have fun, tell one joke after another. Next time I will, maybe. But it's been an honor to be here, and I hope you'll all understand. Thank you.